Hey friends, and welcome to the Moving Mountains podcast. Moving Mountains is a place to hear true stories of modern day miracles told by ordinary people just like you and me. My name is Paige, and I'm joined here in Alaska by my dear friends Margaret and Bernadette as we witness accounts of how God has worked in people's lives in big and small ways. As you listen to these stories of hope, answered prayers, and unexplained phenomena, we invite you to allow this space to inspire your faith and even to help you recognize the ways in which God is moving mountains in your own life. Hi friends, before we begin today's episode, we wanted to let you know that today's story contains sensitive content that may not be appropriate for all audiences. We do not recommend this episode for children, and listener discretion is advised. Hi friends, and welcome back to Moving Mountains. Today we have a very special guest. Her name is Caroline Perkins. She is the author of ABC Get to Know the Saints with Me, which if you have a kid, then you probably have this book in your house. I know that Augie was reading it on the couch today, and it's one of my son's favorite books. But also, Caroline is very special because Caroline and I go back pretty far to when I was in middle school. She was best friends with my sister, my older sister, when they were in high school and college. And then when I was in high school, she would come during like winter break, I think it was probably, because you were in college. And she would do my hair for my winter formals, which was just the sweetest thing. And it was always so fun to catch up with her. And then so many years passed, and all of a sudden we were reconnecting on social media and both having kids at the same time. And yeah, it's just so cool that you're here with us now to tell your story. So you can say hi now.
Hi. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. But before Caroline goes into her introduction and her story, I believe Bernadette has a very important question for us.
I do. And it's brought to you from my very own kitchen. So I'm wondering, do you wash a few dishes if there aren't that many, even if there's space in the dishwasher? Or do you cram every little spot available in the dishwasher that's open before you would ever hand wash a dish? Caroline, you can answer first.
Like, I didn't even think this was a question. Like, I never hand wash. This was like one of the things in my marriage. Like, when we got married, like, I would look at him in disgust and be like, what are you doing? He's like, well, it's just too big for the dishwasher. I'm like, too big for the dishwasher? What? So, oh, yeah, I'm team dishwasher all day.
That is hilarious.
Awesome. What about you, Margaret?
Interesting question. It depends, but I will wash a dish or two. And it's funny because I don't love washing dishes, but if the dishwasher is empty, I almost want to leave it empty unless I have a lot of stuff to put in it, if that makes any sense at all. But if I'm in a major hurry, I just throw everything in the dishwasher. So it just depends. It depends on the situation. It depends how many. Yeah, if there's a ton of dishes, I definitely use the dishwasher. But yeah, I hand wash probably more now than I ever have, which is strange because I don't love it. Okay, Paige, your turn.
I am definitely team dishwasher as well. And it's actually pretty funny because Christian, he is Hispanic, and a lot of Hispanics do not use their dishwasher for washing dishes. They use it as a drying rack. So when we got married, he was like, you put so many dishes in the dishwasher. And coming from a big family, I just feel like I know how to just, you know, put pieces in like a puzzle and just make them fit perfectly. But yeah, I just unloaded the dishwasher today and I was like, wow, this was impressive that I was able to get all these dishes in here. But now I have to unload all of them, and that's not very fun.
Well, I say still better than washing all of them too. So I'm totally team dishwasher. And it's funny you say that, Caroline, because I was thinking about that question because the same thing when we got married. My husband would just hand wash like random dishes that would totally fit in the dishwasher. And I'd just be like, what are you doing in my head? Because, if, you know, I quickly realized, like, I don't care how he does it. I'm just happy he's doing dishes. So whatever he wants to do, that's fine. But that's when true. I do it, it's like I treat it like a game of Tetris that depends on life and death. Like every yep. single piece that can fit in there will fit in there. I don't care if it's 2 dishwasher loads a day. It's better than 2 hours at the sink every day. So, I mean, it's still some days it's probably that much even with a dishwasher. But
well, you all have kids.
Yep, true. I guess so, that has a lot to do with it. But anyway, thanks for entertaining my question. And we'd love it if you would introduce yourself to our guest now, Caroline.
Okay, my name is Caroline, and I currently live in Denver, but I met Paige in Texas, where I grew up, but I've kind of been all over the place. I work for a really big Catholic company, and my job has kind of evolved over time there. Now I do a lot of writing and I make graphics, which is actually really great because it works perfectly with kind of being a stay-at-home mom as well. I have 3 kids, 1 son named Jack, who is 7, and then a 1-year-old daughter, Paige, and a 2-year-old daughter, Riley.
So, and she's definitely named after me.
Definitely named after you. Actually, the funny thing is, and I'm not going to go on a tangent, but her name was Emma for a while too, because we named her Emma when she first was born, and then we changed her name to Paige. So,
oh my gosh.
No yeah, way.
So funny.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm really excited to be here. I have never ever told my story before, so this is a really special opportunity. And I was actually writing an article about the Christmas miracle of Saint Therese, and it was just the miracle was that Saint Therese wasn't being a brat. Like she was like all of a sudden I was overcame with this like feeling, and I resisted crying in this moment. I resisted throwing a fit, and my life was forever changed. And it reminded me of what you guys always talk about, like how there's no such thing that's too small to be a miracle. Because if Saint Therese is calling that a miracle, then I don't know. It kind of helped me with some imposter syndrome, because I was like, I don't know if my story is like big enough, because like, you know, but. So thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here.
Okay. Yeah. So should I just start my story?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. All right. So where do we begin? So I was a cradle Catholic, or I am a cradle Catholic, but I often consider myself a convert because I fell away from the faith. But it wasn't as drastic as maybe some people might expect. It really all started when I stopped receiving the sacrament of confession and I stopped going to mass. And I think that people don't realize how insidious it could be to kind of get away from the faith in that way. But yeah, I was born in Denver, where I currently live, but I ended up moving around. I was born here and I lived with just my mom. My birth dad left us when I was a baby, and he didn't come back into my life until I was around 5 or so, when my mom got married to my dad, the only guy who I've ever called dad. So for these purposes, I say birth dad and dad. And my life was great growing up. I went to Catholic school. I had 2 stepsisters, and then my parents ended up together having 2 more siblings, and everything was great. The one part, and this is kind of a habit that started happening in my life, was that my birth dad during our monthly visitations was abusing me, and I never told anybody. And that was the first, like, I guess that's when I realized what a good secret keeper I was. And how I could be going through something so horrendous as like getting molested by somebody who is supposed to be taking care of you. And I wouldn't tell anybody. And I realized that it didn't hurt if I didn't tell anybody, like nothing happened. So that's when it kind of all started. Although and I'll probably say this multiple times, that I would never blame him for the trajectory of my life. Not only would I never give him that power, but I also, I I don't think it, you know, it wasn't one thing that kind of was the catalyst. So anyway, I fast forward, I moved to Texas in high school, and that's when I started drinking heavily. And I guess this is a reminder that if you have like little ears, just, you know, this is a kind of an adult story. I was 14 when there was a huge turning point in my drinking where I blacked out for the first time. And we weren't really going to mass. And it was actually funny. Paige's sister was one of my friends, not at this time, but later on. And she would always go to mass on Sundays. She never missed a mass. And I remember being so jealous that like she had that. And for some reason, I felt like I couldn't go there, which is as a result of what happened on this night. When I was 14, I was sexually assaulted by a baseball player. And I don't really remember it happening, but about 6 weeks later, I was throwing up in a Taco Bell bathroom and I didn't know why. And I didn't know what was going on. And I took a pregnancy test and I was pregnant. I was 15. Mm. Yeah, I was 15 in a Taco Bell. And I was terrified. And like, as a mother now, you know, you think that you could tell your kids how much you love them, how much you'll be there for them. But like, at the same time, I didn't believe that. I don't know what the disconnect was, but I didn't know who to turn to. And so I ended up telling two of my friends at the time what happened. And I don't remember exactly how it came about, but I ended up at the Capitol of Texas with a organization that had told me that my life was in danger because my parents were Christian and that I should probably get an abortion because they would kill me and they would probably hurt me and disown me and send me away.
Oh my gosh.
And that it's called, I don't really want to, I don't even want to talk about the company. It doesn't even matter. But it was an organization that I skipped school one day and I went down to the Texas State Capitol and I sat in front of a bunch of legislators and told them this fabricated story as to why I, at 15 years old, could get an abortion and my parents wouldn't find out about it. Not even a week later, there I was getting a surgical abortion, knocked out completely by myself in downtown Austin. And I don't even remember how I got home, but I never told a soul about it. Until now. Didn't tell a soul about it. Didn't tell my parents, like nothing. And that was a huge breaking point for me. But yet again, it was kind of like a secret that I kept and it didn't hurt. Like I didn't have a guilty conscience about it. And I don't, I mean, yet, I should say yet. But I mean, I don't blame my parents for like, you know, not loving me enough to make me feel accepted. Like it was just what happened. But I was, yeah, I was still a child and I did what I thought I could do. I don't know. But this is when the secrets again started and I stopped going to mass completely. I stopped going to confession. That's when I decided that if you're Catholic, you can't do that. Mm. So I had this firm idea in my mind that God would never forgive me. So I just have to kind of play the part. Fast forward to college and I was drinking pretty heavily, but my life wasn't unmanageable. I thought I was managing everything. And it wasn't until my grades were great. This is like something I always remind people, like my grades were great. I was getting internships. I lived in New York City for a while, which is when I started doing drugs and it all compounded on one thing after another. And I'd walk by St. Patrick's Cathedral every day on my way to work. And I never went inside ever. I lived in New York City two consecutive summers and I never went inside St. Patrick's Cathedral because I was afraid to. All the while telling my parents I was going to mass on Sunday and going like at great lengths to lie about how I got there, what I was doing. And so then I was still uncontrollably drinking and I found myself in the exact same position I found myself in when I was 14. But this time I told a member of my family, and the first thing they said was, I didn't know you were sleeping around. Oh. And all of that like shame came back to me again. And so I mean, looking back and like at my diaries recently, I realized that this was also at the time when I realized like I didn't know how to stop drinking. Like people were growing up, people were getting out of their party phase. People, like I was a senior in college and graduation was coming up and people were applying for internships and doing all this stuff. And I couldn't stop drinking. I couldn't stop. And so I ended up going to Planned Parenthood, and they were the people that told me what I wanted to hear. That is a message that, as of somebody who is pro-life and believes like that I would tell somebody if they came to me, it's going to be okay. I'm here for you. And I heard that from the wrong people. Mm. They gave me 2 little pills in a little baggie and said, see you later. And I went home and I was living with like 2 other girls at the time. And I said I was tired, went into my bedroom and had like the most horrific experience of my entire life with an at-home chemical abortion. The next day I told everybody I had a miscarriage and they all said, oh, good, good.
Oh gosh.
You wouldn't have been able to take care of it. So he even told me that it was like, well, God obviously was looking out for you. And I don't even know what I said, but things definitely weren't the same after that. I stopped talking to my family. I ended up moving to Michigan after graduation to work in politics. And stopped talking to my family, stopped talking to my friends. All of my high school friends, didn't talk to them anymore. Ended up hanging out with the wrong crowd and trying to like reinvent myself. Cause I didn't want to be the person I was before. And I met the wrong people. And it wasn't, it was Christmas. When was it? Christmas 2014, when I had my first kind of come to Jesus moment where I realized that I wasn't by myself, you know, cause like I was going through all of these things and I was just going through it by myself. I didn't tell anybody about anything that was happening. I was writing in my diaries. That was my only thing. I wasn't going to mass. And one night there was a guy that I was seeing, and he had followed me from Michigan down to Texas, where I had moved after the midterm election cycle was up. My parents didn't like him, which of course I was like, oh, you guys don't understand, you know. And he, you know, signed all the classic signs of just not a great person to be around. And he was staying downtown, and it was the one night, and I was drinking every day at this point. And when I say drinking every day, like I would have a case of beer or a bottle of wine or like an entire, I was drinking a lot and doing cocaine as well. And this was the one night that I didn't drink. And I don't know why. I think in my mind, I knew that I was going down to like break up with him and end things with him. And that's why I didn't. But I think it was a mini miracle that I didn't drink, because he was reading through my phone and saw something he didn't like, and he tried to strangle me to death. And we were in a hotel room in Austin, and he had me pinned up against the wall. He had beaten me pretty badly, and I was pinned up against the wall. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to reach for the phone, just thinking, I need to call my dad. I need to call my dad. And in the time that it took him to get off of me and go and unplug the phone from the wall, I had run into the hallway and I had blurry vision. I couldn't really see because I'd almost passed out. And there was someone in the hallway. I don't know who this person was, but I said, call 911, call 911. And he did.
Wow.
And I've been in a lot of hotels. Like, I don't see people like, it was a guard. It was like an employee. It wasn't a guest. It was an employee sitting in the hallway. And I think that was my first mini miracle. I mean, there was of course many opportunities beforehand that I should have been dead. But this was my first, like, where I was like, oh my gosh, like someone was keeping an eye out for me. And looking back, like, this was a time when like things should have changed and could have changed, but I wasn't there yet. And I guess my, like, my journey wasn't done. I didn't talk to anybody about what I was feeling after what happened. Obviously my parents came, the police were called, I was taken to the hospital. I was like physically really messed up for a while. But I didn't talk to any of my friends. I didn't really talk to anybody about what had happened, because I was in such a habitual, like, if something's bad or uncomfortable, like, vulnerability doesn't serve anybody. So I decided to move to Dallas. And at this point, the guy who had tried to kill me wasn't caught yet. Spoiler alert, he is in prison now. But at this point, I was living in fear over that. Honestly, just kind of like skating by, trying my best. And I started doing drugs a lot, staying up all night, drinking, not going to work. I had moved to Dallas for this job and I had never even really gone to the job. I was coming up with the excuses why I couldn't, hanging out with the guy who was supplying my drugs. It was just horrible. And so this was also when I started having kind of flashbacks of what I had gone through, everything from the abortion to what I dealt with. Like, it was all just compounding and I had nowhere to turn. And I didn't have anybody to just lay it on, you know, like Jesus. Fast forward, it was around May 2015 that I almost ended my life. I was sitting in an apartment in Dallas by myself with my cat. And I thought I should probably end this. Like, there's nowhere for me to turn. I don't talk to anybody anymore. I've completely ostracized myself. And the reason I didn't was because I didn't. And I laugh now because, like, things are fine, but I didn't know who would take care of my cat. I was like, if I die, who's going to take care of my cat? Like, no one will know where I'm at and my cat will probably die or eat me or something crazy like that. Like, and I didn't want anybody to read my diaries, because at this point, and they're in this closet behind me, like, I had wrote down everything, absolutely everything, because it was like the only way I could get it out, right? Like, I wasn't going to mass, I wasn't praying, I wasn't talking to a professional, or like, I would just write everything down. I didn't want anybody to read those, especially like my parents. But I got in the car and I was driving and I was pretty drunk, and I ran into another car that was parked on the side of the road, and I kept driving. And I drove 3.5 hours to Austin, Texas, with part of my car hanging off. I had a black eye from my drug dealer. I had a bag of journals and my cat. And that was it.
Wow.
I showed up at my parents' doorstep and I said, I need to go somewhere. And they were like, what? Like, I was so good at hiding what was going on. They were shocked. Everyone was shocked. No one had any idea that any of this was going on in my life. Because that's like one of the things about addiction, is that it doesn't always look how you think it looks. Mm-hmm. Although my facade had dropped quite drastically over the last 6 months, but I ended up going to a rehab facility in Minnesota. So away from everybody and everything. And I don't remember much about this, because when you are drinking as much as I was doing and doing as many drugs as I was doing, you can't just quit cold turkey or else you could die. And so they had to slowly wean me off of all of this stuff.
Wow.
So I was in the hospital for a while, and I also still wanted to end my life. I wasn't necessarily like super, like it wasn't a huge relief that I was there necessarily yet. And this is like one of the times that I for sure like know it was a miracle. I'm laying in bed and I am hallucinating, and they call it the delirium tremors, where you are shaking. It's like withdrawal from alcohol, and I'm hallucinating and I'm shaking and I'm cold. I'm in this like sterile room, and all of a sudden I feel like pressure, as if somebody or something's hugging me. And the next morning I woke up and my blood pressure was fine. My shakes were gone. My eyes weren't red anymore. I felt better. And actually, like, I felt good. And I said the first prayer that I had said in a really long time, which was the Serenity Prayer. And I mean, a couple, like, you know, more, it just kind of started compounding on itself. I started going to Mass. So I was in rehab, and I actually did it. I was in rehab for 90 days. I was in a halfway house, which is like the cross. There were some people that were getting out of jail and being there, but a lot were just getting out of rehab, and they like stop there and kind of learn how to acclimate. And then I was in a sober house, which is just basically like you're accountable. There's a curfew, you know, just stepping up to being in the real world. And I started going to Mass when I was in rehab because I could leave on Sundays. And I was like, I just need to get out of here for a little bit. Cause it was inpatient. You can't have your cell phone. You can't have TV. You can't read newspapers. It was like, you're confined. And I said, I need to go to Mass. And what started off was as like a way to kind of get out of treatment for an hour or two was kind of like my place. And I started journaling during Mass. I'd bring my journal and I would just write. And I didn't know who I was writing to or what I was writing for, but that's kind of how I started opening up that, like, that method of like that conversation again. So when I got out of treatment, my grandparents had sent me a picture of St. John Paul II with a little piece of cloth that had been touched to one of his relics, and a crucifix that he had given them. They're part of this organization that goes out and visits the Vatican every year. And I had actually met John Paul II when I was in fourth grade, which was incredible. But they ended up sending me these things. And my grandma, I have it still. It says, this is John Paul II. You met him and you guys are probably best friends, or you guys should be best friends. Talk to him. And I looked at this picture, and it was that picture of him kind of like with that smirk and the like red cassock, and he's just kind of smirking. And for the first time, something in my heart was like, that is what Jesus looks like when he's looking at me. Mm-hmm. Like he doesn't, like, he's not scared of me. Like he's not scared of my past. He's not scared of what I've been through. I don't have to catch him up. I'm like, hey, I haven't talked to you in a while. Here's what I've been up to. Like he is looking at, that's exactly like, I don't know. Like even now it's been years, but I still kind of chuckle because I see that face of John Paul II. So I started asking for his intercession, basically just saying, pray for me, like John Paul II, pray for me, which led me to Our Lady of Guadalupe. And I asked for her, hey, pray for me, pray for me. And eventually I still hadn't been back to confession. I was going to Mass, but I wasn't exactly in it. And so with Our Lady of Guadalupe, reading the story about Our Lady of Guadalupe really drew me into the faith even more, and specifically asking for her intercession. And so it was kind of a stepping, like my life was just going in like baby steps, and it was exactly what I needed. And God knew that that's what I needed, because a year later, I moved back to Denver. I was living with my grandparents for a little bit. And I said, well, I might as well just start working in politics again. And I couldn't find a job. I couldn't find a job until the job that I currently have came to me. And I said, all right, I could do it. Like, I'm not really that Catholic, but I could do it. Well, when you're not drinking and not doing drugs and you're completely like, you don't really have a lot of liquid courage to joke around about or like pretend to be something you're not. So I really had to kind of go back to the basics and recatechize myself. I learned the Divine Mercy Chaplet, which was my first introduction. The Diary of St. Faustina was my first introduction to Jesus again. That was exactly what my heart needed. And I remember reading the diary and just having like a weight lifted. Like, there's nothing, sorry, like makes me want to cry. There's nothing you can do that will make me love you any less. Like, there's nothing, there's no misery that's a match for my mercy. And I'm like, nothing. There's nothing that, like, and I had done everything. And he was still talking to me.
Thank you for listening to part 1 of this episode. We look forward to sharing part 2 with you next Wednesday. Hi friends, we wanted to take a moment to say thank you so much for your support and encouragement that has brought us all the way to season 3 of this podcast. We are so grateful that our little homemade project has come so far, and we look forward to continuing to share these powerful miracle stories with all of our listeners. We consider the Moving Mountains podcast to be a ministry, and we give freely of our time, but do have limited resources, which has at times resulted in mediocre sound quality and production of our episodes. Since the beginning, we've had many people ask how they can help support us, so we recently decided to address this topic. One dream is to hire a producer to improve the quality of our recordings. Also, thus far, our podcast has been shared by word of mouth, thanks to all of you. But we would love to expand this ministry by advertising our podcast so that more people have access to the miracles recorded here. If you feel called to support this ministry, please search for Moving Mountains Podcast on patreon.com. or check out the link included in our show notes and on our Instagram profile. Thank you and God bless. Thank you for listening to the Moving Mountains podcast. If you have a miracle story to tell, please call our hotline at 412-449-9609. And be sure to follow us on Instagram at Moving Mountains Podcast AK. We encourage you to subscribe, leave us a rating and review, and share our podcast with others. We'll see you next time.